the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. Brock and Salk. Whoa, podcast. Hold on. What's the deal?
I feel good today, man. You know what? I miss hearing this music every morning.
Like, I don't miss talking to you that much, but I miss the music. Like, this would kind of get
the
me.
The rock pile.
You well, you said 714 pod open.
Open and you I said, did. Oh, pod open.
Oh, hold on.
No, just that was sounding good. Just run it.
That wasn't the right one? I didn't know you kept all these in here. I searched open. You know, howdy. The amount of
are you kidding me, Salk?
Is who kidding who?
How do he keeps Salk all pod- of this stuff? How do you think he's going to blackmail us years from now?
What?
Brock and Salk
how
podcast.
Keeps it all open?
Freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Phew. All right, here we go again. Brock and Salk podcast. Look, Howdy's computer's not working. I try to help the guy out by playing the open.
And Mike's been so good. He's been junior IT, almost graduated to senior IT in the last year.
So did you get him? And you got him a subscription to Gizmo magazine for Christmas.
Gizmag, yep.
I should have looked and saw that the real open's only a minute long. This other one was 15 minutes. That was a mistake. Well, look, can you win the game in the first quarter? No.
Hell no!
I'm going to finish strong.
Hell no!
I'm going to finish strong on this podcast today because obviously I didn't start great. Hi, buddy.
How you doing, bud?
I'm so good, man. Well, I'm so good, honestly. I mean, Seahawks are playing tremendous football the last three games. Really, other than the Giants game for the last, 6 weeks or so, they have just played as well as I've seen them play in a few years. We'll talk about that. Great Christmas season was fantastic. My favorite holiday, or one of my favorite holidays anyway, coming up here. I love New Year's and New Year's Eve. Not going to be quite the same this year, but still, I get excited for New Year. Things are good. Things are
How's
really
the tree
good.
Doing? The tree survived Christmas?
It made it all the way through. We did take it down last night.
Okay. But you made it through.
It made it through with a plum. It looked great.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
Mr. Great. Christmas back this year. Made a key decision on the tree this year.
Oh, the tree
yeah, you told us this a couple weeks ago. Yeah, we remember
put,
that?
We you didn't play put the open again? Yeah, we didn't put the, I told you, we didn't put the,
no, garland,
the heavy stuff
garland
on it. You didn't burden it too
right.
much.
Yep, yep. We didn't make the tree do too much work.
No,
right.
And it's kind of a great analogy, kind of a great metaphor to Russell and the Seahawks, like in December's, like in years past, just, he was racing for an MVP a couple years ago, just let him do his thing, just burden him all, put it all on him, and December
because it looks
kind of,
so good. It looks so good
yes.
once you put it on there, like
yep.
this.
Everybody
this
loves it.
The garland.
Ideal Christmas tree,
right.
yes. Russell Wilson with this offense is ideal.
You know what, though? The garland doesn't look as good as you think it does. I thought it looked good for a long time. We have this sort of beaded garland and stuff, but the problem is, and I have a noble fir, so I don't know what kind of tree you use, but with a noble fir, like there's a lot of branches, and when you end up putting the garland on, it droops, which sort of creates that like Charlie Brown Christmas tree looking thing, which is fine until you take a picture of it and you're like, oh, that actually just looks sloppy. Like at first you think it looks good, and then ultimately it's like, no, it just looks sloppy. It just looks sort of thrown together. So this year's tree looked a little bit more professional. Sometimes less is more. And maybe there is your analogy for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, this is the best they've been playing heading into the playoffs since 2014 or 15. When's the last time they were playing this well heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's been
certainly
a while.
2014.
It's been a while. But you know what's
maybe
fascinating 2015. As you say that? Is Howdy smirking over there? I can't see Howdy.
Well, now he is. Now that you said that, he is.
Because as you say that, I know Howdy's smirking because I don't know. What do we have? 500,000 people that listen to this podcast, Howdy? So
at least.
Just under.
Is it 250,000 of them that are like, I am Salk, if I could punch you in the face right now, you think this is good football? There are so many people that hear you say that right now and they are cringing.
Why?
Like they are so mad. That is so ridiculous. Good football was September. Good football was just putting the ball up and down the field and scoring points and winning and 5-0. This is just down to the wire. They're not playing good football. And is it half the audience, Howdy? Three quarters of the audience? How much of the
least.
Audience that will take this in?
But hold on. But half the audience wants to punch me in the face anyway. It has nothing to do with what I just said about the Seahawks.
If there's a Venn diagram, it's probably the same people right over the top of
doesn't
each other.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
How many of, honestly, how do you're a good little arbiter of this? How many listening heard Salk say that and just cringe? Like, how can you say they're playing their best ball? How can you say this is great looking football? How can you say this is their best December 5 years?
Put Joe Buck in that category. Poor Joe Buck wanted out at halftime. He's like, well, this is just nothing happening here. I'm going to talk about the paint on the ceiling. I mean, Joe was out. He hated the first half of that game.
I was so surprised. As many games as he's watched in the NFL, as many playoff games as he's called in the NFL, to have that reaction.
It was a good, hard, physical, tough-nosed football game.
It didn't look like a bunch of ineptitude out on the field.
It looked like good defense.
Teams were like, eh, I don't know what to do. We can't do anything.
Well, to be fair to Joe, he's the number one team. He doesn't have to call Taylor Heineken or whatever the guy's name is. Like, that doesn't happen to Joe. Right, I mean, he's kind of living a charmed life. He doesn't call bad baseball games. Doesn't call bad football games. Like, if Joe's there, you know, he's calling the best. Right, he's been calling Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and some of those games for years. Good Seahawks.
And this is the most explosive offense in the history of the NFL. Like, we talked last week about all the comebacks, and that was a fun story. You know, I get these same notes, and I should send them to you. Did I send you guys?
Was too much reading. I tapped out.
Oh, okay. Well, I sent you the packet. I thought
not my job anymore, man. That. I tapped out of that.
You tapped out of it? Okay. Yeah. But, you know, this, as far as points scored and touchdowns scored, this has been the most prolific year in the history of the NFL. So that's what Joe and Troy and a lot of viewers and people think. So a 6-6 game.
Joe's
no
like, well,
touchdowns?
Not much happening here. Joe, come on. They were going back and forth. There's a lot of hitting. It was good defensive football. It was old school. I loved it. Maybe I am getting old because it didn't look like the Big 12, and I was still okay with it. But, Brock, this is the best they've been playing since, I think, let's say 2015. They were playing pretty well then. But 2016, just to go through quickly, just to remember, 2016 was the year Russ was hurt, right? Their defense was awful. They ended up beating a really bad Detroit team at home, and then they went on the road to Atlanta. Brock, that was the game I watched at your house.
Yeah.
And they got destroyed.
Ooh,
they got taken down.
Had there not been a penalty called on the kick return, punt return, it had been close.
Yeah, no.
Closer.
Nope. They were, their defense was bad. And it got shredded by Atlanta that year. 2017, I know it wasn't that year because they missed the playoffs. 2018 was the Dallas loss, right? Where, now that's the one that people tend to disagree on. A lot of people think their offense, you know, there was too much running and this and that. I remember their defense giving up 3rd and 15 for a touchdown at the end of the game with Bobby Wagner, Frank Clark, KJ Wright, all completely whiffing on tackling Dak Prescott. But, hey, we all have different memories of that game. So maybe for you, you would say that one. And then
the offense was bad that day. I mean, Fluker couldn't block anybody.
Good.
Sweezy was playing with a broken foot. I mean, it was that was kind of a rough one.
Yep, that was, and so I don't know, maybe they were playing pretty well heading into that year, but I don't know that we had a ton
No,
of
December and 18 and 19 were a pitfall.
Pitfalls.
18 was Russell was the MVP until December, and it was, okay, we're going to finally crown him, he's doing all of this, and then they took
apart.
A couple losses in December of 18, a couple losses in December of 19.
And we know their defense was bad last year.
Yes.
I mean, bad. Outright bad. The whole roster was bad, it seemed, last year, other than Russell Wilson, so... All right, maybe you can find a year in there where they were playing equally as well, but I don't know. I think this is probably the best they've been playing since 2014 or 15. I think that's a great day. I mean, they're playing amazingly complete football. They're balanced.
Yes.
They're physical.
Complimentary. They're playing, for the first time in 5 years, I think I can say that confidently, that they are playing complimentary football in all three phases. The special teams are fantastic. Right. Their coverage units and the Ben Burkervins and Cody Bartons and those guys love it. And they just absolutely love it. And while, you know, they only play, what, 6, 7, 8 snaps a game, they do those exceptionally well. Your kicker has not missed a field goal. Your punter is fantastic. Like, that phase is awesome. And defense, the last 7 weeks, has been the most historic turnaround I can ever remember in the NFL. From the worst, most inept, statistically worst defense in the history of the league, total yardage, passing yardage, to the last 6, 7 weeks looking nearly dominant, and including the most dominant they have been ever against the Rams over the weekend. So, in complement it with a run game and Russ not making mistakes and making plays when he has to and finishing in the fourth quarter, they are playing Pete Carroll. And that was like the coolest comment of all. Yes, Joe Buck was not enjoying it at all. Aaron Andrews, I thought, gave a tremendous kind of hit there at halftime of Sean McVay painting the picture beautifully. Like, let me in my oversized sweats run into the locker room and I got to get this thing fixed. Can't believe my offense can stop. These guys never stop me. Blah, 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 blah. And Pete's like, oh, isn't this great? double rainbow. Woo! This is awesome. 6-6, no touchdowns. Love it. And Troy Aikman nailed it. He's like, isn't that a perfect picture of these two? McVay's a mess. His offense isn't going. And Pete loves it. This is Pete Ball. For a decade, Troy's watched it. This is the way that Pete loves to play football. And it's been a recipe for a whole lot of success, and including his fifth NFC West title in, what,
there's 11 years. There's a chaos theory around Pete. He thrives in chaos. In a way that a lot of coaches in all sports, but especially football, do not. NFL coaches tend to be, at least in my experience around so many of them, my impression of NFL coaches, and Brock, you've been around a lot more of them, and just football coaches in general, they're meticulous, right? They like everything in its place, and everything is like if slot A goes into part B, et cetera. I mean, like, isn't that how football coaches are for the most part?
Well, they script. Remember, most of them, like, for the whole offseason, script the whole offseason of March. So they've got every day, every rep, every team period figured out. So,
they're what we call anal.
Very scripted.
They're anal retentive. Like, that's sort of how football coaches are. And Pete's not. Pete's like, penalty, whatever. I don't care.
Pete Carroll is like a kid with 11 tops on each side, and he pulls them as hard as he can. He just wants them to start in the right spot and then just keep going and knock everyone out. That's all he wants.
I mean, we were watching the game the other day, and they had the long pass to David Moore down near the goal line, and I turned to Heather and I said, there's no way the Seahawks get a playoff after this. The excitement of a long play? There's going to be 35 seconds before they even bother to stop celebrating to even come up with another play to call. And magically, they got up to the line of scrimmage like really quickly. So I don't know what happened there.
It's only happened one time this year. It's been crazy. That's one thing they fixed.
It's because Shoddy's in the booth, guys. If Shoddy was on the field, Pete's on his back.
Right.
It's true.
Yeah, so that's why Shoddy went to the booth.
And it's not just them. NFL teams all seem to have a problem. Like, we had a big play. Panic! Like they don't seem to know what to do. And thankfully, they didn't huddle on the next play. They got right up to the line of scrimmage and went. But Pete does thrive in chaos, and that game was chaotic. And Seahawks tend to make the teams they play against play chaotically. And I think that's been helpful for them for the most part over the year. So, yeah, look, they're playing complete football. They're balanced. This is the most physical they've played in how long?
Oof.
And I don't just mean on offense. This is not a let Russ cook running game thing. Their defense is playing physical football, right? Like when guys get the ball, for the most part, I know they had a couple missed tackles late in that game, but for the most part, guys get the ball, they get hit. Jamal Adams hits people, right? This defensive line that was as maligned as any could be early in the year has played, they out-physicaled the Rams offensive line, I'll tell you that much. They out-physicaled Washington. They out-physicaled Arizona. They out-physicaled the Jets. Outside of one really awful play, they out-physicaled the Giants. This defensive line with Puna Ford and Jaron Reed, and it's too bad Kyle's not here because I was hoping to rub a little LJ Collier in his face because that guy's been physical.
Yep.
Their whole defensive line, Benson Mayo, has been physical. And I don't know whether that's just Carlos Dunlap coming in and letting everybody kind of slide into their own spot, but almost every single week they go out and are more physical than whatever offensive line they're playing.
I would agree with that. I do think Carlos plays a role. By the way, why does Troy love Puna so much? He just loves Aikman, loves Puna Ford. It's just
he talked about it for a while.
Yes, he does. Yeah he and Puna's had a great year. I'd be remiss though if those D linemen, Mike, it's kind of like linemen, offensive linemen. They love it. They love it when a QB throws a bomb and I just get to take a little break and jog down the field and just don't have to grind out the next 50 yards. Right? They just are in heaven celebrating. Watch them. They pump their fists and high knee down the field and they get so darn excited. And I think D linemen the same way. When you have Jordan Brooks run by you like a missile. Right. And just blow up and leave parts on the field. Jamal Adams run by you and just at a speed, that warp speed on the goal line. Like, oh my gosh, can you believe that cruise missile? Isn't that kind of fun to watch him just seek and destroy? And I think those run and hit guys, Diggs will run and hit you. The corners, DJ Reed is unbelievably physical. So I think all of those guys have benefited in the D line, and maybe more than anybody, to just have some boys back running and hitting and setting the tone so that, man, if we hold up our gaps, right, and those guys bounce it out, I know that explosion is coming in the form of Jordan Brooks and Jamal Adams in particular, and then, the other pieces around it.
Why was this, as you mentioned, historically bad defense? Historically bad. The worst defense in NFL history. How did they become a top 5 or 10 defense in the league, one that Jamal Adams says is number one? And it's not like ridiculous. He's probably not right that they're number one, but they're certainly playing in that
top
in that
five.
Vein.
They've been playing in the top five here for most of the second half of the
now,
season.
Some of that is the talent they've played against, right? They've played against some.
You get Colt McCoy and you get Sam Darnold
that
and
helps.
You get Dwayne Haskins. And, you get guys that aren't even in the league anymore.
Yeah, that
certainly helps. And you dislocate Jared Goff's thumb. And, there is some of that. But it really didn't matter last year who you faced. You faced the corpse of Matt Schaub and others. And even in the first half of the year, you had guys just tear you up. And Jared Goff had a field day. And Kyler
benched.
Had a field day. And, so
it
really didn't
it?
Matter who was playing. So, yeah, why?
What is it?
I tweeted after the game and gave an immense amount of credit to Ken Norton and Pete Carroll. Those two, to me, need the first share of the credit. And maybe John Schneider, too. I should probably include John in that because of the moves that he made, and Dunlap in particular. But instead of wallowing in self-pity, instead of just saying, no, we're going to go out and keep playing base every snap, and we're going to just kind of do what we've been doing, they actually looked in the mirror and made an adjustment. I forget what game that was after. I know we talked about it.
Well, the Buffalo game was the mess, and then they played the first half against the Rams. Was as bad as anything I've ever seen.
Yes.
And then they came out after the first half against the Rams, played really well in the second half, and they've been better since then.
Yes. And Pete also said, he was pretty transparent with this. Got to get fixed. Like, this is not just quarterbacks unrecognizable. Like, this is just, we've got to make some adjustments and some changes. So I think the willingness to do that, they did not do that in 2019. Whatever numbers they looked at and what they did like out of all their base defense, I'll never understand, but they did. And I'm sure there are some things that they did like, but I mean, that base defensive thought through the entirety of 2019 was a disaster. I mean, it was just a mess. And, I think here in 2020, kind of go down that road a little bit. Let's move KJ to Strong, Bobby. We'll get Jordan, play a lot of snaps. And then it's, I think, a reality of this just is not putting everybody in the best position for success.
Well, so I want to make it even more specific than that, because you mentioned the KJ Wright move. When did that come? When did they finally decide KJ was going to go to strong side linebacker?
It's been most of this year. Yeah, I think that has been almost the entirety
because
of the whole year.
At the beginning of the year, I don't know, he was
I mean,
there.
Jordan Brooks was injured a little bit for like 3 weeks. So, I think they were kind of had to move some pieces around. But that, KJ doesn't run like he used to run.
Well, that's what I was going to wonder. Is KJ Wright the strong side linebacker? In addition to Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams coming back, but how important has it been moving KJ to that spot? Because he sure seems like he sets an edge over there.
Yes, he has.
Like, you can't run over to his side. They're not giving up the edge. He looked great on all those boot plays and everything else and all the things that position's supposed to be. And that position was supposed to be Bruce Irvin.
Correct.
Right, heading into the year. That was supposed to be Bruce's job to be the strong side linebacker, which we know he could do in this system. And moving,
but then you have three age linebackers, right? You have Bruce and Bobby and KJ.
That's right.
Three guys that know how to play the game and can still maybe get away with it like an old man on a racquetball court, but they're not running and hitting like they did 5 years ago.
And then when you had to move KJ back to Will for a little while, all of a sudden, his speed gets exposed the way it didn't when he was younger, when he was really fast and go gadget arms and everything. But now all of a sudden you put him into a different spot. You get Jordan Brooks on the field. You trust your first round pick. LJ Collier starts to grow into it. I mean, he doesn't he have to be considered part of this? What he's done over the last 5 or 6 weeks versus what he was last year? LJ Collier has three sacks on the year. He's come up big. He's involved in almost every big play that they've made in those fourth and short stops, etc. I mean, I'm not just making fun of Kyle here, but maybe the ankle injury last year was a big thing and he finally gets on track this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's not been dominant this year, but he's played his role and played it well.
But last year, people at that position were getting run over.
Yeah, and a season ago, he contributed zero, zilch, nothing. I mean, it was kind of hurt you on the field. So now I will say it will be nice in the years to come when he no longer has to put his hand up to say, that's mine. Right, like on a tip in basketball, like that was my tip in. Like, okay, we got you, LJ. Yeah, you don't have to. Yep, you made a sack. You made a tackle for loss. You don't have to raise your hand and let us all know.
What are you talking about?
Oh, he does it every time. You don't notice that?
So does everybody in the NFL.
No, they celebrate, but he raises his hand to the statistician up in the booth. Like, it was me, 91. It was me. You don't notice that? You haven't noticed that this season? Like every time.
Yeah.
You know, people love to celebrate, and they'll make a scene, they'll do a dance, and yeah, they'll pump fit. But he raises his hands like in basketball when you tip in the basket. Like, no, hey, psh, that was me. I got it. I got that tip
what
in.
What in the
that was
my, world are you point. Talking about? You, of all the takes me. I've heard from you in over 11 years, this is the worst. What are you talking about? Who cares?
You've not watched closely enough then. If you go back
it's
and you
irrelevant.
Look at
it's a celebration after the play. That's what everyone in the NFL's been doing forever.
No. Not everybody raises their
hand. I don't like
hand.
These kids with their celebrations after a sack. They should go back to the huddle and hand the ball to the referee like
Barry Sanders.
You know
I love celebrations. You know I love celebrations, especially with other teammates. This is the trust me, if you go back and watch the tape, you'll see. It's a little different. It's
get out of here.
And I get it, man. After a year where you did not have a tackle in 230 snaps, you want to make sure, like, hey man, I can do this, and he can. In all seriousness, tongue in cheek, like he has carved out being a difference maker in his role.
And they're getting that pressure up the middle on third down that we weren't seeing earlier in the year. And that's him, that's been Puna at times,
Jaren.
Right? Jaren Reed, I mean, saw him come up with a big sack. I mean, we could talk about Goff's thumb all you want. It doesn't affect the sacks at the end of the game. It didn't make him slower, all right? I mean, like, okay, maybe he had a little trouble with the accuracy, although I didn't notice it. He sure seemed like he threw a couple of good balls afterwards.
I don't know how he did that, by the way.
Good for him.
Tough dude.
Yeah, he's not a hard gripper like Troy.
He holds it like a golf club. He just stays nice and soft. Yes. He's gentle in there.
Oof. Yeah, that's that was.
Does Jared Goff seem like...
Airhead.
Does he seem like the least intelligent quarterback in the NFL?
You're biased because of the Hard Knocks, the sun.
Ryan Tannehill wasn't much better.
No, you're biased.
I'm not biased. Stop it. He just seems, I don't know the guy, just watching him out there, he just seems like an airhead. You're right.
He's just airhead. He's a super nice guy.
He's very pretty, which is great. Is he leading your quarterback good looking list these days, Howdy, after Garoppolo?
He is way up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be him.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, after Garoppolo, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
I mean, like, Jimmy's obviously. In his own separate category.
Yeah, I mean,
of good-looking.
There's no comparison. Yeah.
Where do you put Carr? Which Carr is in the league now? Derek, right?
Yeah, Derek Carr.
Where do you put Derek Carr with the eye?
If this was the early 2000s and emo was high, right. Like way up there, he'd be top five.
So what is the deal with the middle linebacker for the Rams? Beaker?
Beaker. Reader, Troy Reader.
Reader, sorry. I thought he was like Beaker. Me. Not that Beaker. Like Jeff Datz. Not him. But Reader. Did you see the close-ups? They kept showing close-ups of him as he's like, you know, peering into the backfield.
Does he have the eye thing too?
Yes. Dude, I think that he has it like, it looked
tattooed?
Like he had it tattooed on like Carr.
Interesting.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Yes.
I don't notice
like
that
look at all.
As a middle linebacker?
I don't like that.
It's one thing as a quarterback, but as a middle linebacker? It was bizarre. I've been watching this show on Hulu. It's a Canadian show called Letterkenny. You ever heard of the show?
Oh, yeah. It's Paul Gallant's way into Letterkenny.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Letterkenny might be the funniest show on television. Like, it's hysterically funny. But there's a group of sort of like, they call them the skids. It's like these emo meth heads. And that's sort of what he looked like. That's all I could think of as I was watching. I was like, man, that guy looks like Stewart from Letterkenny. Anyway. All right, so defense playing better. You can kind of come up with all those different reasons.
But Jamal is a major one. Let's be very, very clear. Like, Pete and Ken deserve a ton of credit. Carlos Dunlap and LJ Collier in that defensive line deserve a ton of credit. The juice that Jamal Adams is playing with and what that is doing, invigorating everybody on that entire defense and truly elevating them. Like, you know, who's the guy that's going to elevate everybody around you? Back in the day with the most historic defense in the NFL for, you know, for a 4-year run that was as good as any defense in the history of the league, you had a bunch of dudes that would elevate. Cam elevated, Richard elevated, Bobby at that time elevated, your D-line elevated.
Earl Thomas had that kind of energy that infectious.
Yeah, those things help. I don't know, though. I'm going to keep going back to Ken Norton, and I'm going to take Jamal's words to say, because Jamal was here at the beginning of the year. Yeah, they had to figure out how to use him better and this and that, fine. But the biggest problem in the beginning of the year is that they weren't in the right place. The guys weren't in the right places, right? A guy would drop back to pass, and there'd be seven open receivers, even though only five were in the route, because they were all open. Nobody was in the right spot, and Jamal specifically talked about that after the game.
That's the main thing, and just knowing our swagger, knowing who you are. You know, as a human, you can't forget who you are in this world. Right. If you're confident in what you do, if you feel you're the best at what you do, you got to keep that swagger and that intensity at all times. You can't never let anybody knock you off your pivot. The marathon continues. I always say that, you know, no matter the wins and losses, No matter how much adversity you go through, you got to keep going. You can't listen to the outside noise. You got to keep going. Keep your head down. Keep grinding because, you know, it's always light at the end of the tunnel. And that's how we approach everything.
Well, that's not the cut I was looking for. But
why you play Thomas Rawls?
That sound like it a little
bit. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, my gosh.
It does sound a little
if
Rawls-y.
If you put that music behind.
Maybe Audi can do that for next week.
Oh, my goodness.
See if we can figure that
just
out.
Just play the beginning of that again. Close your eyes and remember the heyday of Thomas Rawls.
Those tough times, like, you know, it helped us for now. You know what I mean? And we're hitting our stride at the right time. You know, you always want to catch hot, you know, in December, right? Going into the playoffs. Obviously, I kind of had to learn that.
Was that Thomas Rawls or Jamal Adams?
I mean, it sounds sort of similar.
Oh, my goodness.
I do whatever I got to do to contribute to this team. I won a championship. I've been waiting my whole life for this. I wasn't here last year. I broke my ankle. I was sitting on the couch, had my leg up. I told myself, when I got to this point, oh man, I do whatever I gotta do for it. Anything. Doesn't matter.
There's definitely a similarity there.
Dude. Like the pace that
I knew what was at stake. My offensive line knew what was at stake. This whole team, we playing for keeps. It doesn't matter. It's the playoffs. It's time to go. Whoever ride, we ride. Whoever not, they got to go. And everybody in this team, in this locker room, they ride.
That's still the best one.
So good.
Now give me Jamal.
No question in my mind. Obviously, the guys that we have, the coaching staff, how we practice, it's unbelievable. You know what I mean? And going into it, obviously, you know, the start of the season, we had a lot of ups and downs. A lot of guys hurt, including myself. And, you know, when guys got back.
My ankle
on the couch.
I broke my ankle.
Oh
my
gosh, for everybody out there, they got to start putting respect on this defense's name because this defense is playing lights out. And to me.
All right. Well, they do sound alike. Thankfully, they don't play alike because Jamal Adams has been really good.
Yes.
And Thomas Rawls is, you know, Thomas Rawls. But.
But remember, too, like, we can remember this. We don't have to go back to 16 or 17 or 15. Remember, like, the first few weeks of this season, go back and listen to the podcast. Like, oh, my gosh. You hear the explosions on the field and, mm-hmm. and how fast they were playing. And then what happened? Jamal got hurt. You know, Jamal went out and obviously, you know, some areas got exposed and you know, all the things that we just got done talking about with personnel, you lose Bruce Irvin, you got to move KJ around. Jordan Brooks is also out. DJ Reed's not even in the picture. Dunbar with his broken knee is trying to play, can't cover space. So, you know, there's all of those things that also contributed and, you know, communication happens when you start working together. When you actually start doing shows every day together, when you actually spend time together, when you're on, you know, these defense coordinators this year in the NFL, I've heard this term. I hadn't really heard it before, but they call it time on task. How much time on task do we have of the same people, you know, repping the same things all out there together on the practice field, working through it and having Ugo Amadi, he's going to be our nickel and we're going to play more nickel and we're going to do that. And DJ Reed, you're going to be the other corner and Jamal and Diggs, you two are going to go to the Pro Bowl and you're going to communicate together. And right. I mean, you just had time on task and you're starting to, I think, really reap the benefits of that. And Jamal's right, man. Communication. You can't communicate when it's all sorts of different people doing different things and different schemes. And when you start to dial in and figure out who and what you are,
you got to be in the right place.
You have a chance to be pretty good.
You got to be in the right place. And that's why I think of all the various reasons, and there's a lot of them, Ken Norton's going to be right at the top of my list because now the guys are in the right place. So that's his job as defensive coordinator. Get the guys in the right place, put them in a position to succeed. And that's been the case for the better part of a month. And, you know, you get to see it against San Francisco and probably C.J. Beathard and then on to the playoffs. So New Year's Eve, I mentioned, Brock, one of my favorites. You can let Ascend take care of you in your celebration this year for New Year's Eve. How about an exquisite 5-course meal? You like a big new. I like doing something special for New Year's, right? We've done steak in the past. We've done fondue. It's always been a big Salk family tradition. But I like the idea of going out. So here you go. 5-course meal. You can bring it in, of course. Each order of two comes with a 375-milliliter bottle of Bollinger Special Cuvée. They got a full menu, which you can get at ascendprime.com. But this is what you're looking at. Duck and caviar amuse-bouche. You like an amuse-bouche before?
Ooh, amuse-bouche for
that
me,
sounds
please.
Bougie.
Yes, yeah. Very bougie.
Like it.
Sushi course.
Of course.
Main course, including some koji-smoked rib cap and ginger-infused brown butter seared sea scallops.
You had me at rib cap.
Right?
You had me at brown butter.
Brown butter's good, isn't it? Hello. You ever make brown butter at home?
Yes,
I have. It's really good.
Yes, and not as hard as you'd think.
Actually not that hard. You'd think it would be hard because it sounds fancy, but it's pretty easy.
Yes.
And really delicious. And then you get two dessert options to go with it. So Ascend Prime, you can check out the menu and order. Here, I'm going to give you a more complicated address to go to. You ready? ExploreTalk.com. T-O-C-K.
Well, fortunately, it's on tape, so you can just go back multiple times and listen to it until you get it right.
ExploreTalk. ExploreTalk.com/AscendPrime.
Oh, okay.
I still think I would just go to AscendPrime.com. Doesn't that work?
ExploreTalk. T-O-C-K.
ExploreTalk.com/AscendPrime.
Anyway,
it's New Year's Eve. Just go big. Go big at home. Get the full 5-course deal from Ascend. Brock, we spent all that time talking.
We did?
Yes. And we didn't really even talk about the offense, which is, I know, what everybody in town is talking about. Because to me, the defense is the story. Like, yeah, they can argue about Russ cooking and this, that, and the other. And I think that the two things are related. I think playing complementary football, as you mentioned earlier, I think part of the reason the defense has played better over the last month or so is that the offense has played complementary to it. They've run the ball more. They've not turned it over. They've not played loosey-goosey football as they did in the middle portion of the season. And I know there's people around that are upset about it because they think the bad Russ is coming out, or Russ doesn't look good, or, you know, they've crawled back into their tortoise shell. But gosh, I think they've played more physically. I think Russell's been efficient. Not a single turnover against the Ram. Really, the only turnover in the last few weeks was a bizarre kind of fluky tipped play. I mean, other than that, Russell's been incredibly careful with the ball. He's run the ball better. He's been creative. All the things that make Russ have been there.
Eliminated negative plays. You just eliminated the negative plays. The sacks, the fumbles, the interceptions, you know, those negative plays that just drive Coach Carroll nuts. It's the essence of the program. It's all about the ball. It's taking it away defensively, and then offensively, it's cherishing it. It's protecting it. It's making sure that it's yours, and that every drive, as they like to say, is going to end either in points or a kick. You're just not going to give life. And even in that first half, you know, when Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd are doing what they do as two of the most dominant defensive linemen in all the NFL, you know, instead of Russell just spinning around, backpedaling, let me see if I can run out of this. Okay, I'll just eat it. I'll just take this sack here, and then it's going to be -4. It's not going to be -14. It's not going to be a fumble. And, you know, with what we're doing defensively, we'll live to play another day and ultimately put together two touchdown drives. It'll be the difference. And we're the difference in the outcome of that game, and certainly when it mattered in the final 7 minutes.
And the Rams have a good defense, right? They have arguably the best defense in the league.
They're the number one defense in the league.
And so, you know, you weren't just going to be able to run all over them, gash through them, or even throw the ball all over the place. They're good at all levels of that defense. And I thought the Seahawks had a really nice plan against them. They used Chris Carson appropriately, right? They handed him the ball. They got him the ball in space. And he broke a few. I mean, he wasn't going to have a 7 yard per carry average against a team like that with the kind of talent that they have on the top of their defense. But they used him well.
Yep.
They didn't overuse them. Did you think they overcommitted to the run in that game? I didn't.
Nope.
I didn't think that they overcommitted to the pass where they were just coming out gunning every time. I think what's been great about them over the last few weeks is that they're truly putting the defense in a bind where on any given play, you don't know what's coming. They might run, they might pass. And they are equally capable right now of doing either one.
And you don't mind not seeing 30-plus points. Because I think that's where a lot of the fear and trepidation comes from, Mike, is they're going to say, okay, I'm going to save this. I'm going to save this copy of Salk saying this, how much he loves this offense. And then when they lose to the Packers, you know, 30-20,
or
they lose to the Saints because
they
can't outscore the Saints.
If you want to come out, if you, and I think they'll be more capable if they play balanced football here for a few more weeks. The problem they got into is that after winging it all over the field for as long as they did, teams figured out how to stop it, and they came in prepared for that. Well, now they can't do that. If you want to play two high safeties the way the Giants did every game against the Seahawks, now they're going to just run the ball on you.
Yep.
They're going to take the short passing game. They found out how to adjust to some of that stuff.
People, myself included, are really worried by the fact that the last 3 times you tried to air it out, you got nothing, zero. So, do they still know how to do that? Because they have yet to show.
Well, the people on the team didn't leave. DK's still here. Brock says Tyler Lockett's an elite receiver, one of the best in the league. He's still here, right?
But the concern remains, because the last time in the playoffs when you needed to do it,
no, it makes sense. You're right. Russ forgot how to throw. Russ forgot.
Well,
He just plain old forgot. He forgot how to throw.
I'm so thankful that you listen to my games now. Like all those years.
Whenever I have a choice of games to watch,
yeah,
easy, I go with your game.
Oh, that is so sweet. That is, honestly, that kind of makes my day.
Cecily, though, who's, I told you, been watching every game with me now.
Yes.
Every time Troy Aikman's on, she's like, Zaprock? She's convinced that Troy Aikman is you. I'm like, that guy's 15 years older than Brock. Like, come on. She's like, oh, it looks like Brock.
I'll take that. I mean, that's positive. He's
He's a Hall of Famer.
I'm not gonna hit on that one. A
couple of rings on those fingers there. It's not bad.
No, I think that is honestly the fear. I said that at the in last.
That they
segment.
Forgot?
Yes. The last three times they tried to do
sense.
This, Russell Wilson threw pick after pick, wide receivers dropping balls, and there's pressure everywhere.
When they need to do it, they'll do it. But they don't want to do it. They want to run and keep it tight and play. Not just, I shouldn't say they want to run. They want it balanced. I heard Stelton say this the other day. Oh, Pete Carroll football is running, running, running. No, it's not. It's more running than the rest of the league, which is turning into the Big 12. But Pete Carroll, as he has told us on this show in particular, is not looking for a 75-25 run-pass split. He just wants it to be more balanced. That's all. He wants them to play it safe. He wants it to be balanced. He's not looking to take unnecessary risks before he has to. I know it goes in complete contrast to the rest of Pete's personality, but it's the way he views the game. It's why he doesn't like his safeties getting beat deep over the top, and they haven't been for weeks. That's Pete Carroll football. It all works together.
Yes.
It's all part of one philosophy. It's everything that a business is supposed to want. Start with a mission and a vision statement and point everything towards that thing. Well, Pete's got those things. They're short. They're a little more compact than maybe I would prefer. But, hey, he's talking to football players, and it seems to work.
And he knows from his end in how many 50 years of coaching, he knows the most difficult beast to contend with on offense is a balanced one. Can I, you know, you hear every defense coordinator say that, you know, and I have for 14 years on the road. We got to stop the run. Well, why do you got to stop the run? Because I want to take something away so I can at least defend the other end of it. And we watch that.
Run,
we watch
demoralizing.
We watch defenses against the Seahawks say, oh, you're not going to run it. And part of it was Chris Carson was out for 4 weeks as well. And, you know, that the backups just are good players, but they're not, you know, they're just not Chris Carson. They're
sort
not
of,
as impactful.
In some cases, they're Travis Homer. They're not even necessarily good players. They're just
or DJ
guys.
Dallas,
right.
Bless his heart, you know, who's battling on the IR and inactive and everything else. So, you know, they looked at it and said, great, okay, they're going to make some, but man, we're going to feast at times. And right. If they're a one-dimensional animal, we're going to beat them. And I think you're right. I think this style of ball is absolutely what the coach covets, because as a defensive-minded guy, the worst place you can be is to be in the batter's box and go, ooh, fastball or off-speed, fastball or off-speed. What am I going to get? I'm just totally, I don't know. And both of them are ace pitches, and I don't know what I can do to try to defend it and stop it. And over the course of the game, usually that balanced team wins more times than not.
Yeah, now there are going to be people, and I had Jake and Stacy making fun of me yesterday on their show, saying, what happened to your beloved Titans, Salk? That was the team that plays most physical, and they went into Green Bay and got slaughtered. Tried to run the ball with Derrick Henry, didn't work, in the snow, complete mess. And they're right. That is a team that I kind of like the way they're put together, but they have not gotten better defensively the way the Seahawks have.
Correct.
Right? Their defense is outright bad. The only thing I think that saves them is the physical kind of football their offense plays, that you get a little of the, you know, the complementary element, but their defense is bad. And and secondly, they don't have Russell Wilson. They have Ryan Tannehill. Like, at the end of the day, I can't really pick the Titans to go to a Super Bowl. I like the way they're put together. And if I had Ryan Tannehill, that's how I'd put a team together too. But they have Ryan Tannehill. Seahawks have Russell Wilson.
Yep.
So, yeah, they may not beat Green Bay. I don't know. Green Bay's a really good team. They're going to probably end up with the number one seed here, depending on what goes on in the final week. But I don't think that the problem, if the Seahawks end up losing, I don't think it's going to be because they didn't throw the ball enough or because they forgot how to throw it deep. I just don't think that's going to be the case.
I would tend to agree with you. And by the way, are you buying into, if you didn't like my LJ Collier take in the opening segment, are you buying my take that the most persnickety quarterback in the league is just benefiting the most with no fans in the stands?
Rodgers?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He loves it.
Oh, he just, yeah.
He's eating it up.
It's going to be so hard for him next year with fans in the stands.
These stupid plebes are back in the stands. Get him out of here.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. He is loving every moment of this season. I don't have to sit and hang out with people. Great. You're going to have my scotch at night by myself. Awesome.
You guys go to – Brock, you go to games, so you see the difference. Do you notice that there are no fans at all?
Not anymore.
I don't even notice it a little bit.
Not anymore.
It means zero to the viewing experience at home, whether there are fans there or not.
It's pretty amazing, right?
It's really – and the same was true with baseball this year. I mean, like, I think I remember we had a conversation about – I watched the highlight of something. I was like, what are all those people doing there? My God. Like, it looked wrong to have all the people partying in the stands together. And, like, it's going to be a strange adjustment when it all comes back.
But it's going to feel so good because the big moments are going to get so
much
bigger.
It's going to be crazy.
That's the thing that I don't think about it because I haven't seen it in a long time.
Right.
But when you get that thing, when the game is on the line or a huge play happens
and the crowd is freaking out,
you're going to love that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, certainly that fourth down stop would have been a great example of that, right? I mean, like, the crowd would have gone insane. What was Brock's phrase? Ape nuts crazy, right? I mean, I think you would have seen it. It's funny, though, watching it at home, don't really notice it anymore. Like, not even a little.
Kudos to, in seriousness, kudos to the NFL, and kudos to Fox and CBS and the partners of figuring out some of the sound as well. Because trust me, if there was no sound and that was not, you know, they didn't figure that element out, you would notice. Mm-hmm. It'd still be uncomfortable. Because when you're there in warm-ups and there's not really any sound, it's like, this is a morgue. And you talk to the players still, and they're not used to it.
No.
Right? They're like, this is just crazy. I mean, it is just, it is.
The NFL bizarre. Has always been about the television product above everything else. And the television product, not missing a thing. Honestly, it's really impressive. So, speaking of impressive, Seahawks win another NFC West title, right? In the year since Pete's been here, he's shown he's clearly a Hall of Famer, right? This isn't a doubt. Pete Carroll is a Hall of Fame coach. There should be no doubt about that whatsoever. We'll forever be grateful to Pete, right? And say that what Pete's done here is unprecedented.
I think Roz tweeted it and put an article out that, you know, he's now the greatest coach in the history of the Seattle
Sports. Who did he beat out for that?
Well, Lenny Wilkins was pretty good. Lenny won a world championship with the basketball team, with the Sonics in the late 70s, one of the greatest winners in the history of the NBA.
Pinella took a franchise that meant nothing, that had no hope, and turned it into a winner. No championships, though.
Certainly your Sounders, you know, and your Storm coaches have won titles, but as far as, you know, the football, basketball, baseball, hockey, unfortunately, you know, baseball is just...
The thing about the NFL, though, and coaching the NFL is that the coach means more, right, than in some of the... I mean, basketball coaches are whatever.
Now especially.
Did you say Don James, Howdy?
I haven't yet. No.
Yeah, I mean, Don James would be
another good one.
I mean, he'd be probably the one you're competing
with.
That's
probably right. He's probably the answer. I would agree with that. Yes.
So just doing it for decades, doing it in different eras,
Coach
going to Rose Bowl after
more.
Rose Bowl, winning the national title, making Washington. You could see how hard it is, you know, to make Washington just geographically where they are, just one of the brands through the 80s and 90s of college football. Pretty darn impressive.
Well, regardless, he's a Hall of Famer. It's sure. It's no doubt, et cetera. And what he's done here is incredible. We should all be grateful to him. However, we mentioned this a little bit last week, and I was thinking about it again watching Monday Night Football. I can't shake the Belichick-Brady results from this year. They're, like, completely changing the way I view everything.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm surprised to hear that.
I thought that Brady would struggle and Belichick would thrive. I really did. I was wrong.
Even with eight players opting out in New England?
Well, that didn't help. That's true. and you're right. Maybe that there are ways to sort of see the other side of this. This isn't like a definitive take, but for years I have believed that Belichick was more important to the Patriots' success than Brady. And it's hard to think that right now today.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think right now today as Brady is going to go back to the playoffs. Now, I haven't been perfect. Now, to be fair, he decided to hamstring himself with one of the worst coaches in the league and a guy that doesn't fit his style at all. But okay, he's still going to go back to the playoffs, right? Because we got Gronk. Yeah, because they wanted to play with him. It's not that they wanted to go play in Tampa. It wasn't an organizational thing where they want. The Glazers still own that team?
Yeah.
I mean, like, they didn't want to go play for the Glazers. It's not that they wanted to go play for Brucey Bruce. They wanted to play with Brady, right? So that's why Gronk's there, and that's why Antonio Brown is there and everything else that they've had some success with. So I don't know. It's hard for me as I watch the Patriots just get pounded by the Bills and Belichick's throwing his headset and Matt. Like, how do you not look at it a little bit differently now than maybe you did if you were like me and the Belichick is more important than Brady can? And if that's the case, then how do you look at Pete and Russ? Because Pete only had, what, 2 years here without Russ? Made the
7-9.
To be fair, he was just building his program at that point. So I'm not going to like fault him for those 7-9 years. But it's really hard for me not now to look at it and say maybe Russ is more important. It's not a shot at Pete. It's just looking at the Brady Belichick thing and saying the only true dynasty of however long we've been here where we got a chance to see them split up at the end. Right? Yep. Andy Reid for all those years, all of a sudden gets Patrick Mahomes. He's unbelievable.
Yep.
Not that he was a joke before, and not that Belichick is like a bad coach because Brady's not there, and nor is Pete a bad coach without Russell Wilson. They're all great coaches. But championship after championship and being elite like that, that might be more quarterback than coach when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think I'd kind of lean on that. And remember, I mean, it was Matt Flynn that they gave kind of the money to, and it was going to be Matt Flynn.
Stop. That's not fair.
Could you imagine Matt Flynn leading in Super Bowl?
You had a good point, Brock, about Russ and all of the guys that he is essentially superseded and weathered.
Yes, pretty remarkable. And Pete, for that matter, too. We've seen coaching changes, and Bruce Arians is out and everything else. But, yeah, I mean, it was Colin Kaepernick and Carson Palmer. And, you know, those, say what you will. I mean, at the time, like, oh, my gosh, Colin Kaepernick's changing the position. And Carson was leading Bengals and Cardinals to playoffs and those organizations. And, yeah, and he kind of weathered the first wave of quarterbacks. And now it's Jimmy Garoppolo and it's Jared Goff who get the money. Both of them get paid. It's Kyler Murray's number one pick. And who's kind of weathering? Doesn't matter. Like, okay, bring them all
along.
In
the beginning, it was Sam Bradford, for God's sakes. I mean,
number one pick.
Yeah.
Kyler was number one pick. Sam Bradford's number one pick. Carson Palmer was formerly a number one pick. Jimmy Garoppolo, they traded for. They paid him 20-some million bucks. Like, okay, let's go. Bring in the arms race. Come on, bring everybody in. And each of them has a little bit of a window. Like, oh, celebrating, you know, this game changer. You know, celebrate. Oh, look at Jimmy G. Take him to the Super Bowl. And, boy, he's the best-looking QB. And the Niners are just different with it. And who's the one left standing? Like, who's the one in the late rounds? And that's the beauty, man. That's the beauty of just Pete and Russell and why kind of back to our opening segment as well of how and stylistically you want to play. A lot of people can play from the front. A lot of people can knock people out in the early rounds. Can you get to when it's really gritty and tough? Can you get to the late rounds? Are you confident in rounds 13, 14, and 15 where who knows what's going to happen? I could get knocked out. I could knock them out. If it goes to the judges, have we done enough? Well, Pete and Russ are comfortable. Let's go. Let's get to the very latest rounds every single year as they've done, what now, for five NFC West titles for Pete in 11 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, four for Russ in 9 years? You know, it's a style that they're super comfortable playing, and kudos to them, and this year in particular defensively, for turning it around and for Russell saying, whatever it takes to win, whatever it takes, whatever I got to do, I'll be willing to do it. I won't get an MVP vote, and in fact, maybe now even Josh Allen in the hierarchy of hype this season, right, with Aaron's going to win it, Mahomes is right there, Josh Allen's been phenomenal, and maybe now he even falls to in the hype machine fourth, but he don't care. He went to another division and has a chance to have this team playing their best ball when it matters the most.
Trying to go back and think of some of the quarterbacks that we've seen in this division. Was it Ryan Lindley? Was that the guy we were trying to think of? Ryan Lindley,
yes.
with the fake headphone deal?
Oh, yes.
San Diego State?
Maybe.
Yes, that's exactly who it was.
Was he the guy with the fake headphone
deal? The knockoff
deal?
Bose headphones, yep.
It wasn't exactly. John Skelton?
Nope, that wasn't John Skelton. Nope, saw him too.
Remember when they brought in Kevin Cobb in Arizona? I mean, like, the things that have happened since Russ got here and the quarterbacks that he's weathered the storm through, still hasn't missed a game, which is just remarkable. I hope that the people don't hear that as a shot at Pete Carroll. I don't mean it that way. And Pete deserves all the credit for what he's done with this organization. But I can't help looking at it a little bit differently since the Belichick Brady thing. It just feels, and John Schneider, you know, that's sort of the last conversation I wanted to have with you here, Brock, is you know, hold on, we'll do that in a moment. Hey, last thing as we just look big picture with the Seahawks, and then I got three kind of quick things I wanted to address with you. But you know, we spent a while heading into this season looking at John Schneider and where he was at, and maybe even wondering, you know, what the pressure was on him this year. If they didn't deliver, if they didn't certainly win a division or maybe get to an NFC Championship game, what would John Schneider's position look like with the Seahawks moving forward? Where are you at right now on John Schneider?
Well, John Schneider is proven alongside Pete to likewise with Pete to be aggressive and go for it. And in season to make some of the moves that he's made. That's I think through 11 years, I'd say, what does John Schneider do best? I think he trades best. I think the Marshawn Lynch trade. I think the Carlos Dunlap trade. I think his willingness to be aggressive, to go for it, and make those kind of in season moves when needed, or in this case, when was the Jamal Adams? Was that July? Right before camp, June, July, like, hey, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to give up two first rounders. We're going to go for it because this guy is going to so energize our team, our organization. We're going to need it. There could be some ups and downs and going to have to pay him a lot of money. But, you know, he's a risk taker. I remember his buddy saying that, the old GM that we had on a few different times, the old Tampa Bay GM. And I remember
Mark
asking,
Dominic?
There you go, Mark Dominic. Said, Mark, what does John do best? He's like,
I just raised my hand in the air like LJ Collier.
LJ Collier.
That was me.
It was a great poll.
That was me.
It's tremendous.
Thanks.
But that's what he does best. And you know, and at times in the draft, I think there's been too much risk and looking too much on the upside for guys that turned out they couldn't play a lick. Took some risk with Jimmy Graham and Percy Harvin. Not going to be 100%. No GM is. But man, the move for Carlos Dunlap, the move for Jamal Adams, you know, those two have been so hypercritical to their success this season.
Well, and beyond that,
The draft class, you've gotten more out of than any of us expected.
Yeah, I was sort of going through kind of how, you know, what this roster looks like talent wise right now. And yes, some of the probably the three top things you'd look at would be, or at least the top two, the Adams and Dunlap are both trades. The Dunbar trade hasn't worked out, but they didn't give out much. I mean, like, I'm not going to fault them for that. That was a good upside attempt to bring in a high-impact corner, and unfortunately just didn't work out the way they hoped. But it certainly balanced off by picking up DJ Reed, and I think he's got to deserve a lot of credit for finding a guy that, you know, he's their next Justin Coleman. I don't know whether he either ends up playing the slot or ends up playing the outside, but just in terms of finding him, picking him up, and turning him into the kind of player that he's been, I think you got to point at what they've done to the offensive line in the offseason, right? All of a sudden, the Posick draft, which looked like trash for years, is he's turned himself into a heck of a center, which was always his position.
He's a center.
Yeah.
What he is, you put him in a position for success. Damian Lewis can play a little bit. Now, you also made some other moves there.
Oh, but Shell has been pretty darn good at right tackle. And as much as he looked awful at the beginning, the way he has been okay the last couple of weeks, he handled himself just fine against the Rams, right? So, yeah, I mean, you look at what they've done to their offensive line. Simmons has been a really good pickup when he's come in. Upati has been good. I mean, they completely renovated the worst offensive line any of us could imagine and turned it into a real strength of this team in short order. Okay, fine. Finney didn't work. So what?
Yep.
Didn't they get somebody back for him?
Yeah, Dunlap. They were able to trade him to Cincinnati. Yeah, no question about it.
So
yeah, it's been good. It's been, I think, a step in the right direction in a year that needed to be, in a year where you needed, you know, they wouldn't be here. They would not have won the NFC West if it weren't for this rookie class.
Well, yeah, I was just
Jordan Brooks and Damian Lewis and the contributions of other role players that I really.
Didn't Robinson have four sacks?
Yes.
That would have led the team last year.
That's right.
Yes.
Say that out loud. Alton Robinson has four sacks. That would have led the team last year. And he is, as you just said, a role player. He's not like their big pass rusher. He's a role player. And then throw in last year's class as well, Brock, that is starting to really contribute. Obviously, you got DK Metcalf in there, but Ugo Amadi's contributed. He's become their nickel corner, and he's played pretty well. We talked quite a bit about LJ Collier earlier. Ford wasn't a draft pick, but he's part of that draft class as an undrafted free agent. I mean, That's a lot of contribution you're getting from your last two draft classes that, you know, at first it was easy to foot, well, Blair hasn't played and they haven't gotten anything from the two linebackers, right? I mean, so there were some negatives in there, but the positives are starting to greatly outshadow them.
I would agree. Now there's going to be some, you know, challenging decisions and what are you going to do at corner? How are you going to pay people?
Yep.
And, you know, as there always is every single
offseason.
And you
don't have two first round picks now.
Correct.
Right. I mean, you've spent quite a bit of capital to bring in Jamal Adams.
I think they only have four picks this next year.
Right. I mean, so this will be interesting to see how they handle themselves and their business going forward. But
the lowered cap and everything.
As it stands today, I think you got to take John Schneider. If he was on your hot seat, you probably have to take him off.
Oh,
right?
Completely. Oh, 100%. Yeah, you're NFC West champs in a very competitive year in a division that's, you know, that has been very, very competitive. It's going to go down to the final week to see whether the Rams or the Cardinals are going to be that other team in it. But yes, you're going to, and if you finish this and you go 11-5, you're going to be the two or 12-4, excuse me. You're going to be the two or the three seed, and hopefully it's the two and the playoffs go through Seattle until you got to go up to the frozen tundra.
All right, three tweets, Brock, that I saw over the last couple of days that I liked or just wanted to discuss for a couple of minutes. Let me run through them quickly. Tweet number one is from @snacks.
Mm.
Crushing day in the Salk household.
Yeah, it's tough.
Sunday wasn't good.
Ugh.
It wasn't good at all.
Let's pour out some Cheetos for him.
It was the Cecily, there were tears. I didn't want to video it. I'm not like the poor kids that cry but she
you're not that dead. Dad.
No, but it was a tough day. She was not. Avery handled it fine. She was like, I don't care. But Cecily was, she was a little emotional. But Snacks tweeting for the future, he had a bunch of tweets, but this is the one that stood out. For the future, all I ask is that media no longer direct questions about me to the players and coaches. If you have a question, I can answer them for you. They have to remain focused. I've never heard anybody say anything like that. No. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really like Snacks. It's too bad he's deciding this. I understand where the Seahawks are coming from. Monet played a really good game on Sunday, and then
Monet's been better than him. I mean, let's just call people wonder why would you do this? How can you upset the apple cart? Does it matter? I mean, put on the tape. Monet has played better. He's a young guy that you want to continue to play and develop and grow and be a piece for you for the next 5 years. Snacks was, you know, for this season. He had to fill a void when Monet was out and others were out, and you helped trimmed him down to under 350 pounds and gave him a shot to contribute. But ultimately, what, his ego or just, you know, chaos of life and seven kids and everything else? Like, nah, man, I'm out. If I'm not a starter, I'm not going to do the inactive thing. I'm a little torn on this one, to be honest with you, because like, what if Monet sprains his foot or his ankle? Then what? Are you going to call him up and is he going to be good to go? Or is he just like, nah, I'm done?
Well, he wants to play for another team. I don't know if that's going to end up being possible with the COVID protocols and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously a good debate over whether or not to let Snacks go. But I like the way he handles himself and handles his business. I don't know that I agree with his decision to walk away. I think that's a bummer, but hey, it's his call.
Yep.
I've never heard anybody sort of address the idea, hey, stop asking my teammates about this.
Right.
Please just ask me. I'm here.
Yep.
Come ask me.
Well, and that's conduit of social media.
Yeah.
And has he? Have people asked him if you followed up on
that?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's been doing it all year, though. I mean, that's been his personality.
He answers
online.
Questions.
He answers people's questions on Twitter, and he's not a jerk about it like many athletes get to be with this indignation that I'm above this and I don't have to answer certain types of questions. He answers people's questions, and he treats people with respect.
I've really enjoyed him. He's been kind of a revelation off the field. He's been fine on the field, whatever. But off the field, I've really enjoyed everything about the Snacks experience. It's too bad that it's coming to an end. All right, number two comes from our very own, a kid from Kent, Curtis Rogers, producer of the Jake and Stacey show, and you can hear him Saturday mornings on 710 ESPN Seattle. Curtis tweeted after the Blake Snell trade to San Diego, and I love this tweet. He couldn't be more right. The Padres are exactly where the Mariners plan to be. That's why they're able to pull off a deal for Snell, and the M's didn't go for him. San Diego's farm system is still deep, and their title window is now wide open. Seattle will be involved in deals like this soon enough, but not yet. He nailed it. Perfectly stated.
Nailed it.
By the way, that system was so deep that a couple days later, they trade for Yu Darvish, and they're still one of the best farm systems in baseball. That's what you're capable of if you truly stockpile a ton of great talent over the course of a few years like the Mariners are doing. It gives you the opportunities to make all kinds of improvements to your club when you're ready. And for the Mariners to do that right now via trade doesn't make sense to me.
But do you think Jerry knows how to put trades together?
I think he does. I think he's capable of that. But you don't need to do it right now. They don't need to get Blake Snell or Yu Darvish or anybody like that. Now, free agent market, a little different. I wouldn't mind seeing them start to spend a little bit in free agency. I think you could start, if you see the right person that you think is going to be with you for a few years, I wouldn't mind seeing them spend in free agency. But I'll admit, it's hard when you see some of the players come available because they're players you like. I'd love to have Blake Snell. Sure.
And you have the ability to get them. It's not like it's impossible.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a Logan Gill. Who put it out there? Shannon, I think, maybe had a sort of a grouping of what it would look like, right? Of like
Baseball America,
Gilbert and
Jake Fraley, Dylan Moore, and another player,
the kid from BC, Justin Dunn. Like, yeah, you could do that. That wouldn't kill your program. Mm-mm. But do you need to do that? Not right now. Not when you can start building all of those guys up and eventually turn them over for other players. I'll admit, I get caught up. I'd love to have Blake Snell. Kevin Kiermaier's probably going to get traded next. I love me some Kevin Kiermaier.
Love that.
Love Kevin Kiermaier. But injury history, already older. Like, okay, he's better, I think, than Kyle Lewis.
Yeah.
But between the money and the age and, like, I think there's a lot of value to bringing all your guys up. And there'll be another Kevin Kiermaier available in a year or two.
That's right.
There'll be another Blake Snell available in a year or two. There'll be another Yu Darvish. There'll be another one. These guys come available every year. This isn't unique.
But you got to have the horses in your stable to make the move.
You got to have your horses to not only make the move, but have it not affect the stable.
And you have to know that you have answers at positions. When you start adding real serious pieces and giving things up for them, you have to know that the team you're putting them on is pretty set. Because if you start adding Blake Snell because you think Evan White is the first baseman of the future, and then a year from now he turns out not to be and you need more resources to replace him, you're in big trouble. So I agree with all you guys.
Last tweet here, another baseball one. This comes from, do you know who Dan Zimborski is?
Yeah.
He's around. He's a Saber.
He's a baseball savant,
too. Yeah, like sabermetric guy. And anyway, he tweeted the other day, of course the Rays are trading Snell. MLB ownership has successfully pushed over the last 30 years both a revenue sharing system that decouples success from revenue and playoff formats that decouple team quality from success. What would you expect to happen?
It's a complicated tweet.
Very. But can we take a moment and just sort of address, because I think it's an important one. On one hand, he's saying the two things are happening simultaneously. One, revenue sharing means that success does not necessarily the best way to build revenue.
Because almost every team is sharing such a large pool of money.
Yes.
That the floor of performing bad is not that bad.
That's
because
right.
Because you get so much money from revenue.
You're going to make money no matter what you do. Whether you're successful or not as an organization, you will make a bunch
team.
Of money. Yep. So just being there, it's just showing up is enough. At the same time, they've expanded the playoffs further and further and further and allowed more and more teams into the playoffs so that you don't need to be great in order to have success and make the playoffs. Mm. So at the same time, baseball is doing two things to discourage teams from being great. They're saying it won't help you make money, or at least not that much more money. And essentially, anyone can make money and anyone can make the playoffs.
Yep.
I guess that's the simplest way of saying it.
Right.
Anyone can make money, and anyone can make the playoffs. And success, truly being great, has very little to do with it. That's a damning statement.
That's how you get to be the NBA. I mean, their situation, every team spends the exact same amount of money. The revenue is almost completely shared all the way across the board. And if you don't have one of the best players in the league, you punt anyways. And half the league gets into the playoffs as well.
Right.
It's an interesting trend because football
getting into the playoffs
one.
Doesn't mean as much in the NBA though as it does in baseball, because I think we have some of the leftover history of making the playoffs in baseball being meaningful. But in basketball, it's like, yeah, you're first round fodder for some great team. That might not happen in baseball. You can sneak into the playoffs and have even more success. I think that's part of it. Because the number 7 or 8 seed could go deep into a playoff run in baseball, what's your incentive for what? Home field advantage? Whatever. It's just there's not enough incentive for truly being great. And I think what's upsetting to baseball fans, and I'll throw myself in this category, is you dealt with the long regular season because you had to be great to win. It used to only be 4 teams total. 4 divisions, each division winner. I mean, I guess before that it was only 2, but that's before my time. During my years, you had 2 in the American League, 2 in the National League. You had to be great in order to make the playoffs. You'd have 95 win teams miss the playoffs. That was too much. I'm not looking for them to go back to that. But more than 4 or 5 teams? I was fine with it the way it had been the last few years. You were saying essentially 3 teams make the playoffs and 2 teams have a shot. Okay, I like that. No problems with that. 3 teams get in, 2 teams get a play-in game.
And then the league got seduced by one year where they had amazing games all at the same time that decided everything. And they said, give us more of that. Everybody liked it. First time everyone said they liked something about baseball.
But what a mess this is going to be now with 8 teams getting in. Brock, it's sad.
And it's why the College Football Playoff Committee, even in this year of 2020, where everyone's like, just expand. just grow, seriously, go to eight. If you, there's ever a year to test it, well, if eight would have been amazing, are they going to put the toothpaste back in the tube
well,
and go back to four?
Right,
no.
That's the problem. And yeah, well, I mean, they have my own. They have their own issues.
They do. They have other issues.
I mean, we have four teams. I didn't need to see 1 second of football this year to know who the four teams in the college football playoff were going to be.
Yep.
Hey, look, it's Clemson and okay, Alabama and yep. Notre Dame and Ohio State. You don't
Do I need to watch 160 games to know it's going to be the Dodgers? It's going to be the Yankees?
No, but you at least need to pay attention in the offseason to know that it's going to be those teams. Like, yeah. We know Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State are going to be there before any of that, just on the name. Just on the name, you know they're going
to
be there.
Yeah, so. And their offseasons of adding 17 of the top 300 players in the country and right. Their foes adding one. So, yeah.
Anyway, three tweets that caught my attention. What'd you do for dinner on Christmas, Brock? What'd you do this year?
It was good, bro. I went beef tenderloin.
Oh, that's been my move the last few years. We pulled off this year. We didn't do that this year, but okay.
Yep, and I mixed a little bit of olive oil and butter, garlic and herbs, mm-hmm. some seasoning, mm-hmm. slathered it all over it.
Salt?
And then I wrapped
you do a whole
it in
salt
bacon.
Thing or no? Oh, you wrapped it in bacon.
And then I wrapped it in bacon.
Now, do you eat most of the bacon or is it just for flavor?
You eat the bacon.
Okay. Got to eat the bacon. You microwave it afterwards, I assume?
No. You seared it. I seared it. Okay. And that was the biggest trick because it, you know, I had to kind of turn it, like mm-hmm. twist it in the big, like Dutch oven pot thing that I seared it in hot and then flipping it was the whole game. It's like an omelet, like making sure I could flip that over all the bacon stays. Sure. And it did. Oh my gosh.
I know it's immature, but every time I hear somebody cooking in a Dutch oven, I laugh. Like it makes me laugh still at age 42 every time I hear it. We made something I never made before. New item this year for the Salks.
Okay.
Swedish meatballs.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, you talked about that.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Came out perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. Huh?
Did you do them in the crock pot?
No, we did them on the stove.
Okay.
Half pork, half beef. And then we didn't pack them quite tight enough. I'd do it again. I just packed them a little bit tighter. And there's a whole mix that goes in them. You got to really sear those also so they get kind of crispy on the outside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you make the sauce. It's basically just like a melted sour cream. It's delicious. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Huge success. Mm. Huge success. Mm. Doing that again.
Yeah. Good. Keep doing it.
Might do it like mid-year. It doesn't have to be Christmas. No. I might just become a Swedish meatball guy.
Yeah, why not?
Why don't you make that when we all do get to meet together again? Why don't you do
What's that going
to
be?
Can you make us some Swedish meatballs?
Can we meet at Kyle's house out in the open somewhere where he can Traeger us something like that? I don't want to cook for you guys.
He's got enough property. We can all perch ourselves up in different places.
We can hang
he
out
does
with
the
bear.
Smoker outside. You do the Swedish meatballs inside, and then we'll all eat on the deck.
That sounds pretty good. All right, okay. Kyle's not here, so we just invited ourselves to his house, which is perfect. All right, next week, Brock, coming back here after New Year's Eve. Season will be over. We'll know what the Seahawks playoff opponent is. Still holding out a little hope for the bye. I'll admit, I'm holding out a little hope. I know it's unlikely. I know that it's hard. You need the Saints to lose to Carolina. You need Green Bay to lose to Chicago. And you've got to take care of business yourself. So the odds of all three of those things happening are low. But I'm going to hold out a little bit of hope that Mitch Trubisky is going to continue his little run, finds a way to beat. But that's the one that's not going to happen. I could see Carolina beating the Saints. I could see the Seahawks winning. I just don't buy that the Bears. Hasn't Aaron Rodgers just had his way with the Bears over the years? Mm-hmm. I mean, just embarrassing, right?
Yeah. No fans in the stands either.
That's going to be a tough one. So. All right, we will see you guys next week. Until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See you, everybody. Get to the chopper!